Garrett Ilsen here, your celeb expert and your celeb savant. Celeb Savant is a weekly entertainment show. We have long-form career retrospective type interviews with celebrities, singers, actors, and industry experts. For years now, twin brothers Jack and Patrick Pierce's high-energy duo Pierce Brothers has been a staple of the Australian indie folk or blues and roots scene, captivating festival goers and headlining sold-out venues the world over. Exploding onto the world stage in 2014, the brothers started their journey as buskers on Bourke Street, alongside other incredible busking acts, Tash Sultana and Tones and I. Soon, the Melbourne duo began a steady journey building audiences and selling out shows all over the world, supporting artists the likes of The Cat Empire, St. Paul and the Broken Bones, Tones and I, and Tash Sultana, just to name a few. The band's music has grown with them over the years and has seen them release a number 13 debut album on the ARIA charts and two top 10 ARIA EPs. Having established themselves as an integral part of the music scene in Australia and abroad, the brothers have toured relentlessly, honing their craft and gaining fans across the globe as they go. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Jack and Patrick Pierce, otherwise known as Pierce Brothers. Where do we find you in the world? How are you doing and what's happening in your life?
Well, thanks for having us.
Yeah,
we
it's great
are
to be here.
Sitting at Jack's place up in the hills of Melbourne, Victoria in Australia.
Yeah, it's very cold at the moment.
Yeah, I live in the city. Jack lives out in the sticks.
Okay, but wait, you say it's cold, but for the guys listening, we're on Zoom. You're wearing T-shirts. Obviously, it's hot inside.
So we're on Zoom. We're sitting in. Jack's just built a little a music studio, so we've just been writing some music.
Yes,
and putting some things down, and then he's also installed a heater. So
okay.
And I say it's cold. It's like 10 degrees. Like it's not crazy cold.
Yeah.
It's snowing or anything like that.
Okay, yeah.
It's cold the way Cape Town gets cold.
Okay.
Yeah. You know.
Well, I mean, like Joburg's cold at the moment, and I mean, two jerseys and a jacket, and that's we're at like 13 degrees.
It's pretty similar.
Cool. Yeah. So let's rewind all the way back to the very beginning. So tell us at what age you guys got motivated and invigorated to pursue music and how the journey followed on from there.
Well, I'd say that we always loved music when you were younger, but I think starting to play guitar around grade six. So what's that? About 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Our older brothers were the youngest of five kids.
Oh, wow.
Old mum and dad going for number four, and got four and five. And so we had two older brothers that played guitar, and we just wanted to be as cool as our older brothers. So I know that's what it was like for me.
Yeah.
And our uncle used to play guitar whenever we go camping, and he was a great guitarist and a great folk singer. And so that kind of set the ball in motion of us wanting to play. As far as performing goes, I think that we just kind of always had a bit of that center of attention kind of wanting really, you know, everybody, hey, look at me.
I'm just the right amount of insecure that I need constant validation. It really just leads me into the musician's lifestyle quite well.
That's so funny. I laugh because I think I'm the same.
I think a lot of musicians would hear that and go, that sounds fair.
Yeah.
So I read up that you started doing busking. What was that like?
Yeah, that was great. There's a spot in Melbourne called Bourke Street, which is sort of like there's a big sort of mall and stuff on it. It's in the center of Melbourne. They get about 10,000 people walking down there an hour, you know.
Oh, wow.
And we got chatting with who are now our managers. They were in a band called Bonja, and they'd done it. And they said, we were sort of just starting up, and we said, what do you reckon? They said, get down there and start busking. We'll lend you some of our gear. It's unbelievable. So we went down there with some CDs and just got stuck into it. This is before like Spotify, we're dating ourselves here. Yeah. This is before Spotify had really taken off and CDs were still king.
Yeah.
It was about 10 years ago or 11 years ago. We sold like 150 CDs in a couple of hours, and we're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
So then we went back the next day and we did it again, and then we did it again and did it again.
And we ran out of CDs.
In the first year, we sold like 30,000 records of this thing. So we quit our jobs. We're like, this is fantastic. And then we started talking. Like then I remember Tash Sultana was 15 at the time, and I spoke with Tash and I was like, hey, you got to start busking. And Tash was like, yeah, sweet. And then Tash got into it, and that's how that whole journey started with Tash.
Yeah.
And there was a time when we were busking there, Tash was busking there, and Tones and I was working in the surf shop and would come out and watch us. So was it,
and then Amistad as well.
Amistad, who have really blown up, they were busking at the same time. So
yeah.
All these musicians were sort of all sitting on Bourke Street at the same time and just talking and playing music. I remember a couple of years ago, I was on a bus in the middle of the night. We were on the tour bus in Germany. And I was sitting there with Tash, and we'd supported Tash at some big arena somewhere. And we just sat there just waxing poetic about how easy it all used to be. There was no emails or managers or labels. You just wake up and you're like, you were really looking at it through rose-colored glasses, you know, just going, easy was life?
While you're sitting on a tour bus.
While I was sitting on a tour bus. And I was just like, I mean, come on, this is pretty cool.
Yeah. So I need to add Tash and Tones and I to my list, because I've already interviewed Amistad, so I need to get all four of you into my repertoire.
Absolutely.
So there we go.
Yeah.
Yes, you mentioned that 10 years ago there were CDs and now there's the digital platforms. I'm not sure if you're aware that the physical is making a comeback. A couple of years ago, CDs had an increase in sales, first time in 21 years. Last year in the UK alone, vinyls has sold 5.5 million copies, biggest since 1990. Cassettes are making a comeback. So we have this physical growth again. I love me a CD. I love the aesthetic of holding something.
I think that's what it is. I think it's a tangible thing,
yes.
You know, but I think that's why people lean more towards vinyl than they do CD.
Yeah.
Because they like, a lot of people will buy it because they like the putting down the needle and listening to it front to back.
Yeah,
some people just love the artwork.
Yeah.
So you're buying the artwork,
yes.
And you're buying a big tangible thing. And yeah, I mean, if you're going to, I understand vinyls and stuff. Cassettes, I know they're making a comeback and they're cool to look at and stuff, but they're not practical.
No.
And vinyl's not practical, but vinyl's fun.
No, but
you know?
Vinyl's
you put
like,
the needle down.
Oh, no.
You go through the whole thing, you have a glass of wine.
No, but vinyl's great. It's you know, the famous thing of the vinyl connoisseur. Oh, no, the thing I love about vinyl is it's expensive, but it's also really difficult to use.
Yeah.
Well, for me, I'm the CD person, so I've got the easiest of the three. But
exactly. Yeah.
What is your perception, though, of the digital platforms? We've discussed the physical. What are your thoughts around the digital?
I use it all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely a user of it. I've got Apple Music from, I go for a run listening to that. Pierce Bros has Spotify. Yeah.
I was always really romantic about like the, cause I studied film as well, and I'm a big music, a big film buff. Mm. And I always was really romantic about the video store. And I used to love just going into a place and walking down and get all the things. I love that. And when I've sort of moved out like 8 or 9 years ago, like one of the last video stores was like just down the street. I never went there because it really is just that easy to use. And so I was really romantic about it, but I get it. It works. It works quite well. So,
you know, what frustrates me about it a little bit is, so I teach spinning classes in the evenings and I create playlists of Spotify for that. Like I created these playlists a long time ago and I'll go into a playlist. And I'm like, oh, the song has been removed. Oh, another song's been, and I'm not talking one or two. I'm talking over 50, 100 songs. All of a sudden that were there are now no longer there. Whereas if I've got the CD, then it's always mine. There's not this worry. Oh, songs are going to be taken away from me or removed for whatever reason they've been taken away. So that irritates me.
Yeah. Well, for a long time, we, and it didn't end up happening, but we were supposed to do the Rodriguez tour in Australia and they're like 2 weeks out. He was too sick and he canceled the whole thing. We were gutted about. But, at the time, Rodriguez wasn't on Spotify in Australia. Like Cold Fact and what was the other one? Like neither of those albums were on there. There was like some like one or two live tracks and that was it. But I had the old CD from a while back. So
Rodriguez is massive in South Africa. He is massive.
Yeah, I know. Like, yeah, we all saw the movie.
Back to you guys. What was the progress from the busking to the records and the label and the touring and so forth?
So so busking kind of lent into touring. A big part of our live show is still dictated from our busking days. You know, we're very boisterous, jumping around, always seeking attention, that kind of thing. And that really bled into our performance style. And because that was so successful, we could start doing shows at venues and putting tickets on stuff. First person that we got from there was a booking agent who ended up starting a management company called Lemon Tree Music. His name was Regan. And so then he became our manager alongside his partner. Dave. So Riggs and Dave were our managers. And
Riggs was our agent for a long time.
And Riggs was our agent, but then Harry started being our agent while Riggs focused just on management. So then we had these two parties that were working with us as we were putting music together. And then we put together a single back in 2014.
And then
called It's My Fault. And Regan, our manager,
spoke with this bloke in the Netherlands called Dave. And Dave kind of, so it was the second Dave, and he kind of broke us into Europe. And that kind of had a bit of a hit, and then the labels started knocking, and that's sort of where all that came from.
Yeah, so it was just one step at a time.
Sometimes we need to hear messages from other people, because sometimes I'm like 6 months ahead of where I want to be energetically, and I'm like, why am I not there? And I'm like, so thank you for giving me that message again one step.
Exactly.
Now, you're the third set of twins that I've interviewed for the podcast. I'm a sat being another one. And Lockenville, which is a local South African group. So my question to you guys as twins and as brothers, having lived together and now working together, is there any friction, or is it just you guys are so in sync that it just flows?
No, there's so much friction.
Well, yeah, that's take a guess.
So much friction. It's wild. Our whole team has had to deal with it for years. We each other.
I've just come back from holiday. So yeah. I think Jack's still been running the whole shop pretty well. So
pretty well, he says. He's been running it pretty well, but it's a good thing I'm back, for God's sake.
So what I mean is that everything's very relaxed at the moment.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I'm usually the stress head, so I've come back at everything.
We've always butted heads quite a lot, but I think I remember asking Amistad about it once, and I was like, "Do you guys fight?" They're like, "Yeah, not too much." They're the two nicest guys in the whole world.
They're just such chillers.
Yeah,
it's interesting you say that, because when I asked them that question, they said the only thing they have in common is the music. They disagree about everything else. That's what they told me. So maybe their form of disagreement is chilled version compared to your guys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, ours is miserable for the rest of the team. You know, grumpy. belligerent. Well, grumpy and belligerent is what our nicknames could be.
Yeah.
Cool. Now, from zero to a 3 to 4 minute song. You said you guys are busy working on new music or music at this moment. What is that process? Is it easy every time? How do you create? What motivates it? Tell us the musical journey of creating a song in your world.
Well, first we have a massive argument. It's like we're actually, our keys player Dara Manas is writing this new album with us. And it's great because this is the first time we've really had a third vote. So he'll be the tiebreaker. And it's really just stopped both of us. We're working a lot better together because we're not just going, no, we each have opposing ideas. We've got someone going, no, choose that one. And we're actually getting things done.
Okay. At the moment, we're taking a different tack. What we've usually done in the past is come up with ideas and then kind of fleshed out an idea. And usually in the studio, we'll either get it done. And then I built this studio that we're sitting in. And at the moment, we're trying to write quantity over quality. Yes. The idea is any idea that you have, instead of leaving it as an idea, get it finished as fast as possible. That means the form is done. Lyrics are done. They don't need to have to be perfect. They just need to have to be finished. And then we take it to each other. And then once that whole idea is there, then we jam. And in the jamming, that's where the absolute magic happens.
A lot of our songs, the good ones, have all come from when we're doing sound check and we 100%. Just start jamming, and then everyone sort of just falls into step of something, and then we just go, oh, let's do this, and then someone just puts their phone down and just records it.
And that's always our best work, always. Okay. But
just before we got on this podcast, we just put something up, which is exactly how that song happened.
Yeah, okay. That's our single. We've got a show on Friday night, and we're going to try it as the first song. And we haven't really rehearsed it, but it's not difficult. We don't write difficult songs. And that's the good thing about this particular one, is that it's intuitive because it came from that live place.
This is something we've done before, where we sort of will go in like writing like a Jack White song. You know, we'll have a really
Let's do a Black Keys kind of thing and then write all the different parts. And that can be quite difficult.
And then we really have to play it, and then we're like, this isn't easy.
Yeah. Whereas...
which is fine, but it just means that the first few times we play it, it doesn't sound like we're playing it intuitively.
Yeah,
it sounds like we're attempting something because we don't because rehearse enough.
Yes, that's right. And because we are attempting then, it, we haven't nailed it yet.
Yeah, and then people come and see us and they're just like, what did I pay for?
Yeah.
No, I'm sure.
The idea is that I'm not sure when this goes live. We probably would have already done the show, but
you could
check back in. But we it's going to be the first track of the night, so that'll be very interesting.
Yeah, we're going to film it, so
I'll send it to you. Okay, good. Now, I love this game. My recipients don't generally like it, and one of you is going to have time to think, which is okay. I recognize if I had to ask you guys this question in 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 hours, I know your answer would be different every time I ask this question. And it's not necessarily your favorite, but Jack, if you had to play 5 songs by other artists once we finish this recording, what would those songs be and by whom?
Okay. You'd have The Lumineers.
Gloria.
Yeah, not Gloria. What was the one? What's the song? Leave This Town, not Stubborn Love. Oh, it's off the Cleopatra album. It's the first single. Stack yourself a suitcase, dear. Pack yourself a favorite. Heads on the Floor, Sleep on the Floor by The Lumineers. You'd have Crawford and Sons, The Cave.
Yeah.
You'd have
something off.
No, he's asking me. You can't do it.
Can I write some things down while he's talking?
I think that I'd have a classic in there, like Electric Light Orchestra, something like that. Telephone Lines, you know.
Okay.
That'd be
great.
Right, dude. I know. Yeah. And then I've played them. So I think something cool, like an old Jack Johnson, would be fun. And then if I had to pick an old Jack Johnson, maybe Flake. And then number 5, who have I been really digging? You know what? I'll go with a classic and do Bon Iver, Forever Ago.
Brilliant. Over to you, Patrick.
You've had time.
Yep. All right. So I'd say Marcus Mumford, Going Back to Kansas, is something I love at the moment. You're Not Special, Babe, by this this Irish artist called Orla Gartland. Okay. She's got one of the best records I reckon I've heard in the last year or so.
Yep.
Need Never Get Old by Nathaniel Rateliff. Now, probably maybe Persevere by Gang of Youths, 100%. But possibly there's several on the Go Farther in Lightness or the Angel of Eighth Street actually would be sick.
Yeah,
by Gang of Youths. And also,
Hard as Muscle. It's got to be the Hard as Muscle.
Yeah, or anything off that record.
Just do that whole record.
Okay. Yeah, say Yes to Life, actually.
Say Yes to Life is the one I was thinking of.
Say Yes to Life would be the Gang of Youths
100%.
One. And then I'd say Paul Kelly from St Kilda to King's Cross.
Listen, I'm going to check them out. Some of them I don't know, so I'm going to add them and listen to them later. So moving on, what do you guys enjoy about performing live?
I think the best part about performing live is when you can really get into a flow state of energy.
That's what I was going to say.
Then that you can just be taken away by the music, but also by the performance and the space that you're in and the audience, that you're sharing something together with an audience.
Sometimes you don't get there either.
No, sometimes you don't get there. But searching for that plane of existence to sit there flowing with the audience. And when you're sitting there in harmony and moving through a space like that, that's one of the most special feelings in the world. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we always strive to achieve.
Yeah.
And there's a few tricks to try and get there.
Yeah.
I know for myself to get into that flow state. Something that I've recently discovered is dancing a lot more to free myself up.
Yes.
I can get quite flamboyant on stage, and that immediately puts me right in the space of someone with less inhibitions, so that the audience can feel free to express themselves a little bit more than I can. And that's how I usually try and get there. But that's my favorite thing about
I've actually found recently what I used to do was have a couple of beers before going on stage to loosen up. And I've recently, that's kind of started working against me. And the last few shows I've just been stone cold sober, and I've found that that's actually so much better for me.
Yeah.
I don't know what's changed, but something's just sort of changed in me that I'm so much more relaxed now when I'm just completely.
Are we just growing up?
I hope not.
But, no, you know what? Possibly it is. And I'm just throwing this out there because alcohol takes away a person's inhibitions. And you might have had aha moments or released stuff in inverted commas that was there that you now no longer need alcohol to release those.
Yeah.
Just being
yourself. Now I feel like, and you know, it also could be that we're not playing every single night like we used to. So I need to be a little more focused, but I find that if I'm not as tuned into it, then it'll stress me out. Now just being completely, if I have to focus on it, then I'm not in the moment and I'm not enjoying myself.
Yes. I've got a question for you.
But we just had six weeks
lately.
Yeah, I've got a question. We've just had 6 weeks off and we did two shows on the weekend with no rehearsals. And how did you feel going into that?
I was really nervous, but then again, I didn't have a drop to drink, so I was completely focused.
And those shows went really well. And how do you feel about this weekend? Big hometown show, packed audience. It's going to be, you know, a bigger venue. It's going to be great. I'm feeling really good about it. And especially playing this new one at the start, I'm feeling really good about it.
So the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
Be well. Yeah. Enjoy. Listen. Try and listen. Our keys player listens to a new album every single day and he writes down his thoughts on it into a spreadsheet. He's been doing it for the last 5 years. I'm not saying go and do that, but just try and listen to some new music. Orla Gartland, Gang of Youths, some Australian ones. Paul Kelly is like our sort of classic.
I've heard the Pierce Brothers are okay.
Yeah, no, you know, I've heard they're fantastic.
But we love South Africa and we
That's something I'd say. If you can make it out to South Africa at some point in your life, do it because it's spectacular.